All Things Considered on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Lorna Benson. Welcome to a special report on the conclusion of Minnesota's tobacco trial. The jurors are in the tobacco trial are holding a news conference at this hour, and Minnesota Public Radio's Mark Sedeklik joins me from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, where jurors are about to speak. Hello, Mark.
Good afternoon, Lorna. Good afternoon, Lorna. Can you hear me right now?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know you could. We're in a room here in the St. Paul Pioneer Press building, just a couple of blocks away from the courthouse. The jurors met apparently for some time this afternoon with Ramsey County District Court Judge Kenneth Fitzpatrick. They're arriving right now. Five jurors apparently have agreed to speak with the media. Of course, we're very interested in hearing from them what they think of the settlement. We want to know what they thought of the arguments the state was making and the tobacco industry was making throughout the trial. And they're now taking their seats after a very long day to a crowd of reporters eager to ask them questions. And I think we'll go now up to the table and to Rebecca Fanning from the Minnesota Supreme Court.
My name is Rebecca Fanning. I'm the court information officer. And in a few minutes, we'll have a handout for you that will have the names of the jurors you see here in the order they're sitting, from left to right. They'll be numbered, and the sheet of paper will say from left to right, so you'll know exactly who you're speaking to. And I want to thank the jurors for agreeing to meet with you today. The reporters here know the ground rules, that each organization will be given the opportunity to ask one question and one follow-up question, and will circulate around until every organization has had a chance, and then we'll start again. And I'm going to read the name of the organizations in alphabetical order, and so you'll get to choose who you want to speak on behalf of your organization. And again, you get one question and one follow-up question, then we'll move on to the next organization. So we'll start, is everyone ready? Okay, we'll start with the Associated Press.
Okay. Well, how disappointed were you to find out today all of a sudden that there's been a settlement? Did you have any inklings that this was happening?
Well, we might have had an idea this morning when they called for a recess until 1:30. I would say I was a little disappointed, but
I'm glad to say that I was very disappointed. We went through a long, long process here, and we didn't get closure. And it's too bad that the system, well, I don't know if it's too bad the system gets to work like that. It just does. And I'll pass. I can't bear it.
Before we move on to another question, have we got some technical difficulties? Okay. Do we need to repeat an answer to any of those? Do we need a repeat? Anyone need a repeat? Yes, would you please repeat your answers?
I'm going to Disney World. Yeah, I think we were a little disappointed, or I was, I should say. And now I'm just kind of glad to get it all over with. It's been a long 4 months.
I agree with Jim, but I was very disappointed, not just a little. We put in a long time, a lot of our emotions went into this, and we didn't get closure, and that's very disappointing.
Bloomberg News.
Yes. Could you please address one key question? After the evidence was presented before closing, were you leaning in any direction in your judgment in this case? Did you think that the industry was responsible for paying damages to the state of Minnesota?
I think that's a yes or no question.
Would you please be sure to speak into the microphone?
I think that was a yes or no question, honestly.
I don't think it is a yes or no answer.
It's not a yes or no answer. We had a lot of decisions to make, and we had to make them for each individual company, not as an industry in the whole.
One company or the industry's behavior with regard to the sale of cigarettes?
Well, it was kind of disturbing for a majority of the companies talking about in their documents kind of leaning towards marketing to teens, but I know we never had a chance to deliberate on it, so I don't know how everybody else is thinking on that.
CNN. Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a lot of documents that were pretty incriminating. It's hard to say, you know, single one out.
Yeah, I feel the same way as Jim right here, that there was some, and that there was some that wasn't.
I was still weighing in my mind. There wasn't incriminating evidence, but I was trying to still weigh that in the context of how many documents were produced. I don't think I had arrived really at any hard and fast decision in my mind yet until we were able to talk together, which wasn't able to happen today. I agree with Jill. I wasn't at the point to make that decision. I wanted to review a lot of the documents again, which we were going to be given an opportunity. And also, it would have been really nice to hear Mr. Cerise's closing argument to find out, you know, just we got to hear the defendants. I would have liked to hear the plaintiffs also.
I agree.
Jurors are responding to questions from a group of reporters here in downtown St. Paul.
That might not have been a fair question because we did not get to hear both sides of the closing arguments. So it's still kind of unfinished. And I'm disappointed that I didn't get to hear the other half.
CNN?
Is there anything that you did look at that might have led you to think that perhaps this should be a criminal trial?
The question was, is there anything in the documents that indicate this maybe should have been a criminal trial?
No.
I didn't see anything.
I need to hold my microphone and respond to the question.
Really, nothing that I saw would have been, could have been a criminal.
And as a follow-up, we should say what the strongest stuff you saw did, what was the strongest stuff?
It's hard to put in a nutshell given the volumes and volumes of documents that were put before us. One thing that stood out in my mind that was perhaps a surprise was some of the evidence from legal counsel to the tobacco companies.
I think I didn't expect to see as much information as we did on the antitrust laws, and that was very eye-opening for me.
I'll take this. I thought it was kind of disturbing how much lawyers were involved in what I thought running the industry. That kind of bothered me. A lot more than I ever would have expected.
I missed that one. I'm sorry. There's a question?
My question is, what is the strongest stuff that you saw?
Oh.
It made the most impression.
That's very hard to single out. There's a lot. I'll have to think about that one.
Subject, you know, nicotine research.
Mona, to you now in the studio. The jurors are answering questions from a very large and intimidating group of reporters here in downtown St. Paul at the St. Paul Pioneer Press building. And we'll hear more from them later. I think the best way to do this is to go through their comments and produce some kind of a report. The questions are coming very slowly. So back to you, Lorna.
Thank you, Mark. Minnesota Public Radio's Mark Zadeklik is reporting from a news conference at this hour where jurors are explaining how they feel about not having the chance to consider Minnesota's tobacco case, which was settled today. The trial did come to a sudden finish when settlement did preempt what was supposed to be the last day of closing arguments. Minnesota Public Radio's Elizabeth Stawicki covered the trial and joins me now with details. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Lorna.
before we get to the actual details of the settlement, one thing, you were in the courtroom today when the, what was the reaction in the courthouse when the judge announced that there would be a settlement in the case?
Well, there was one juror who looked like she was a little upset at that they had announced that there was a settlement and that the case wouldn't be going forward. But as far as people in the audience were concerned, I think it was everyone had heard the rumors this morning by 10 o'clock already, and when finally they did come in, it wasn't until about 10 until 2. So everyone, I think, was ready. They were just waiting to hear the judge kind of give the signal.
Well, what were the terms of the settlement?
Well, this is the way it goes. It's about $7 billion in round numbers. It breaks down to about $6.1 billion for the state over 25 years, $450 million for Blue Cross Blue Shield, and about $460 million to Robbins, Kaplan, Miller, and Cerisi, which is the firm that represented the state and Blue Cross in the lawsuit. In addition to that, there are parts of the settlement, namely that deal with advertising restrictions. There will be no more tobacco billboards in the state. The industry can't pay to have tobacco products placed in movies nationally. The industry can't give or sell non-tobacco merchandise with brand advertising, like cigarette logos on caps and jackets and things like that. There's also a ban on direct mailings from manufacturers into Minnesota. In addition to that, the industry can't market to children. It can't make factual comments about the health effects of smoking. It has to disclose the money it pays to lobby. And it can't oppose certain legislative proposals or administrative rules in Minnesota that deal with youth tobacco use. Now, they can, however, challenge such laws after they're adopted.
You read quite a long list there. Essentially, what was in it for both sides to settle this case?
Well, just generally, they had more control over the deal. As you were hearing just from some of the jurors, you had no idea which way the jury was going to go. A lot of people could have said, you know, maybe the state had a stronger case, but in the end, you never know what a jury is going to do. For the tobacco side, they were able to plan this payout. If the jury would have found for the state and awarded, you know, some huge punitive damages, that would have been a different story. But this they can kind of budget into their payout among the other payouts that they have in the other states. For the state, they got what they asked for, and as far as money is concerned, they got more than they asked for. But they also got the other things that I was talking about as far as the advertising restrictions and things that would have never been part of a jury verdict. In addition to that, this is also final. If, let's say, that the state had won a big jury verdict, it would have been tied up in appeals most likely for years. So now there's kind of no waiting. This is a final shot.
Do we know why the settlement talks were so on again, off again?
Well, one of the issues that I had heard that was kind of holding things up a little bit was the issue with attorney's fees. That kind of turned out, one of the problems was is that the state and Blue Cross wanted the tobacco companies to pay Mike Cerisi's firm's attorney's fees on top of whatever settlement would occur. And he wanted, or he initially signed the contingency fee for 25%. And what ended up happening in this particular settlement is that he is going to get 7%. And that money will still be, it'll still be a separate payment. So it's not coming out of the settlement money that was supposed to go to the state or Blue Cross. But it's quite a bit less than initially he had signed over.
So they did get the judge to approve that percentage for the attorney's fees.
Yes.
Is on top of Minnesota settlement agreement.
It's on top.
Yeah.
It's on top.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
You're welcome, Lorna.
Minnesota Public Radio's Elizabeth Stawicki. Minnesota has now become the fourth state to settle its tobacco suit. The industry is already paying out a total of $30 billion to settle cases in Mississippi, Florida, and Texas. Mississippi Attorney General Michael Moore was the first to settle with the industry for $3.35 billion. Florida got $11 billion and Texas got just over $15 billion. We asked Attorney General Moore how Minnesota's settlement affects Mississippi's.
Well, I'm not sure it's going to affect ours any other way than a very positive way. We have a most favored nation clause in our settlement, and then Texas and Florida both copied what we did. And what that means is that any state that settles after we do, if they get any more money or they get any more programs or the like, then the other states are the beneficiary of that. So, for example, if Minnesota gets more money proportionately than Mississippi got, then we'll be the beneficiary of that. We'll get the same amount of money. So we hope that they hit the ball out of the park.
36 states still have lawsuits pending right now. Do you anticipate that each one of them will push for slightly better deals?
Well, I don't think this thing is going to resolve itself that way. I think that we knew all along that Mississippi, Texas, Florida, and Minnesota would be the cases that were actually ready for trial and would come up. And now that these four cases are resolved, I think what's going to happen is the action is going to return to Congress. I was just informed just a while ago that week of May the 18th has been set for Senate floor action on the McCain bill. So that means that there's a good chance that we'll have some national legislation passed this year. So I'm excited for Minnesota, but I'm also excited for the fact that we'll probably resolve this entire thing for the entire country.
So does Minnesota settlement strengthen then the national settlement, which had been on hold lately?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was on hold, but I would say it's been a long haul. I've been working on this stuff for 5 years, and I'm used to ups and downs. But we had a 19-1 vote in our favor coming out of Commerce Committee, and then it looks like we're going to go into the May 18th vote on the floor. So I would say that what Minnesota did today, if they do it, is going to be very helpful to us. I think Skip's done a great job up there for his citizens, and I'm just very proud of him.
You and Attorney General Humphrey have not seen eye to eye on the national settlement in the past. Have you had recent discussions with him about a settlement?
No, I haven't had any discussions with Skip. They haven't done a real good job of communicating with us over the last few months, but that's okay. They've been busy trying their case. I've taken special responsibility about all the states because I guess I started getting all these guys involved in this about 4 years ago, and after I settled my case, I wanted to make sure that all the rest of the states were taken care of. So about 39 out of the 40 states that filed believed that a national resolution was the best way to do it. And Skip and Blue Cross Blue Shield wanted to go forward with their cases independently, which is fine, and I hope they're successful.
So you don't feel any vindication that Minnesota has settled rather than going
to... No, I really wouldn't put it that way. Truth of the matter is, when Skip and I filed these cases back in 1994, nobody gave us much of a chance to win. And he has pursued it as hard as he could. We did the same, and I frankly think that we're both winners today.
Have you received any of the more than $3 billion that you settled for?
Yes, ma'am. I have about $250 million in the bank right now.
How have you spent that money, or how will you spend that money?
We haven't spent any of the money yet. The first part of the payment, the $170 million that we received, is in, well, it's actually about $180 million now, is in the bank in a trust fund earning interest. And then we have about 60-some-odd million dollars that's in a program that we're going to use to reduce teenage smoking in this state with media campaigns, education campaigns, cessation programs, and the like.
Mississippi Attorney General Michael Moore. You're listening to All Things Considered on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Lorna Benson. Stanton Glantz is an anti-tobacco researcher who was thrust into the national spotlight in 1994 when he received an anonymous shipment of 4,000 internal tobacco company documents. Glantz, a professor of medicine at the University of California at San Francisco, used the papers as a basis for a book called The Cigarette Papers, a landmark work about the tobacco industry's deception of the American people. Glantz sees the Minnesota case as a continuation of his work. You might say if The Cigarette Papers provided a keyhole glimpse of the tobacco industry, then the Minnesota trial knocked down the door. Glantz doesn't see a settlement as a defeat. He sees it as another important step in defanging the tobacco industry.
I think the case achieved its primary goal, which is the release of huge amounts of incriminating information about the tobacco industry. And that information has just transformed the issue and will form the basis for a tremendous amount of litigation carried on by other states and private enterprises throughout the world. Because the fact that Minnesota fought the hard fight to get these documents disclosed and force them into the public domain will save everybody else having to keep fighting that fight over and over and over again. And I think that's going to be, that may well be the most important legacy of this case.
Do you think it was wise for Minnesota to settle given the amazing court track record that Big Tobacco has had?
It would have been nice emotionally to have gone to a verdict. I mean, a lot of people, I think, are going to be disappointed that the state settled. But if the terms are good and the public health is advanced, there's nothing wrong with it. Mississippi, Florida, and Texas all settled for essentially 100 cents on the dollar for the Medicaid costs and got increasingly good terms for their states in terms of concessions by the industry, in terms of advertising, funding for public health programs, and the like. And as long as Minnesota is continuing to move the mark forward significantly, I mean, that's a good thing. One of the big problems that's existed is that the anti-tobacco education programs are supposed to be limited to children. It isn't children that the tobacco industry kills, it's adults. And furthermore, it's basically impossible to reduce smoking by kids if you don't deal with smoking by adults, because the adults are the role models for the kids. 70% of adult smokers wish they didn't smoke. In any given year, half of them try to quit. And a real meaningful tobacco control program needs to address the smokers' needs as well as the kids who you're trying to keep from smoking. Here in California, where we have a large anti-smoking program, in the early years of the program, it was designed like that. It was focused on everybody, not just kids. About 4 years ago, the governor refocused the program on kids under pressure from the cigarette companies, and what we found is teen smoking went up 30%, and the progress we were making with adults also reversed. So if you want to really do something about tobacco, you've got to deal with the problem broadly. You can't just focus it on kids. You've got to deal with the problem much more broadly.
One of the things that states have been saying is that they want to put the tobacco industry out of business. If cases had gone to the jury and the jury had awarded substantial punitive damages, wouldn't that be a faster way to put the large tobacco industries out of business than reach settlements?
Well, there's no question that a positive jury verdict would have been better. But my goal in all of this is to keep moving the ball forward. And I think that Minnesota has dramatically moved the ball forward. And I think that's what we have to judge it on. I think that based on the information that's come out in the Minnesota trial, other cases will move forward, and the cumulative effect may well be to destroy the tobacco industry as it exists, which would be a great step forward.
Stanton Glantz is a professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and the author of The Cigarette Papers.